If you're an RIA or looking to become one, Schwab Advisor Services is the Watson to your homes. Smart, dependable, always has your back. It's no mystery why they're the number one choice for RIAs who want to be the ultimate solution for their clients. With all the wealth services, technology, and support your firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Follow the clues at schwabvious.com.
Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, one of your hosts, Patrick Van Straten. I'm back from paternity leave.
Ooh,
and I'm joined by the dream team, Sam Abasaki. Hello, Sam.
Yes, bro. How you doing, man? It's good to be on a podcast with you again.
Yeah, it is. It's good. I'm glad to be back. I'm glad that we've got a strong lineup. Didn't want to have to do this with, you know, some of the weaker members of the team. We know who they are. Joe Tomlinson, you're joining us too. How are you, Joe?
Yeah, mate, I'm pretty good. I'm not going to lie. My five-a-side team got dumped 16-1 last night.
Cool.
So I'm still reeling off the back of that. If you want to know how that happened, don't ask me, because I think after about the fourth goal, I blacked out. It was honestly a humiliation.
Honestly,
no,
I was
at least you gave your all until the very end, didn't it? You didn't quit at halftime because you said it was 8-0. You know, you carried on, and that's all that matters. It's the heart that you showed, isn't it?
No offense,
I've never
Sam,
seen anything like it, though.
I can't believe you're saying that, Sam. Like, because this is the thing. I saw in the WhatsApp chat, like the Football Daily chat, when they were talking about, you know, the Arsenal under-23s defending in that West Ham game. And you were like, how can they be defending like this? And I was like, Sam, I've played five-a-side with you. This is exactly how you defend in five-a-side. You, like,
Don't swing a leg out. Do that, Pat.
If you don't get
that
there, you're like,
true.
My meniscus is gone. I'm just going to have a big sit-down.
I have changed. This is a new year. Ask Joe, I've not been injured all year. Like, since the turn
of 2021.
I
literally asked you to play five aside three times. You said no because you weren't fit enough. And you were
Bro,
injured.
You lost 16-1. Do you think I can do that to myself? I can't do that to myself. I knew what was coming.
Well, yeah, you're a champ.
I think we've won
now.
One game. Exactly. I'm a champ.
We can't lower yourself to play with like Joe and Temps and Sonny. Okay. Well, it's good to know that you're already bigfooting us. Right, let's move on then. Shall we talk about the podcast? Because today I figured that we could do a little bit of over-under for the season ahead. So basically, I'm going to give you a kind of betting line, and I want you to say whether you're more optimistic or less optimistic. It'll make sense as we go. So I figure this is going to be a good way to talk about some of the bigger stories around European football right now. So let's start at Arsenal, where there's always controversy. Ooh, Arsenal fans already in meltdown after one game of the season. An away loss apparently is now unacceptable to Arsenal fans. And if that's the case, it's going to be a very long year. I was looking up some odds for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang this season, and I found that he is 33-1 to be top scorer in the Premier League, which I think, you know, may be worth a flutter if he stays.
No.
Bagged just 10 in the league last year, linked with a move to Barcelona this week. So I'm going to put the over-under on goals he scores in the Premier League this season at 12 goals. So, Joe, you seem to have a very strong opinion. Do you think he'll get more or fewer than 12 league goals?
Well, he's definitely not going to be top scorer. It's just not going to happen, especially now Romelu Lukaku's joined the league. And when Harry Kane eventually goes to Manchester City, it's going to be a bloodbath. So he's not going to be top scorer. But I will take over on 12 goals. I think it might be around the sort of 12 or 13 mark that Aubameyang hits this season. You've got to remember that last year, I think it was 10 league goals, wasn't it? Against an expected goals of like 10 or 11 as well. And that was 6 months of the season without Emile Smith-Rowe. So I think Emile Smith-Rowe's added creativity. Martin Ødegaard obviously coming into the side adds extra creativity in those pockets. Saka's a year older. I do think I'm much more positive about Arsenal than Arsenal fans. Mm. Like, I had them fifth in my predictions. I think they're going to be around that fifth, sixth spot. They were the third best team in the Premier League for the second half of the season, in my opinion. I think Arsenal are going to be fine. And some of the reactionary statements online have been, it's almost comical now. Like, it's such disarray at Arsenal amongst the fan base that whatever happens, people are kicking off. Like, the Martin Ødegaard signing for £30 million, a 22-year-old coming out of Madrid with extremely high creative numbers that's only going to improve. people are somehow finding a problem with that signing, despite the fact Arsenal needed exactly a player like Martin Odegaard. I think it's totally bizarre, and it's almost now like shiny new toy syndrome. If it's not a brand new face that's going to come in and really light up the room like James Maddison, and they don't want anything at all, so you're not going to get James Maddison. He's too expensive. Martin Odegaard is a fantastic move. I think Arsenal fans need to relax, man.
I mean, I don't know, no one's going to disagree with that.
Sam will. Sam will find a way of disagreeing with me.
The reason I disagree is because the energy around Arsenal has been toxic for years. We know this. We've seen them year after year. This is, what, I think the second or third year that they've finished outside of the top six. Yeah, so like, if you're an
eight Arsenal fan, twice in a row,
that's not good. And when you're going into like a summer transfer window, I know, like you said, Odegaard, I think Odegaard is a good signing, but at the same time, you've seen Odegaard's going to come through the door. You're seeing Ben White come through the door, a man that's only had over 30 plus appearances in the Premier League year. You're seeing teams around you sign Lukaku, Kane's linked with City, Sancho and Varane's going to United. Liverpool are getting back players that they've missed, and they also signed another promising centre-back. Like, as an Arsenal fan, you're going to look around and you're going to think, like, lads, what's going on? Like, are we not going to sign anyone that gives us, like, that hope? Because obviously we saw Odegaard last season. He didn't have the best time at Arsenal. We know that he's definitely got more to give. But at the same time, I feel like they need that one signing that gets the fans, like, up, like, and gets them feeling, okay, cool, we can not maybe challenge for the title, but we can challenge for top four or European spots. And I just don't think they've done that yet, man.
But I think that that's a problem of, like, stuff they've done in the past. So I think, like, I agree that if I were Arsenal, what I would want to do is get one game-changing attacking signing. I think for all the problems people talk about in midfield and in defence, I think the defence will probably be okay. Like, I think midfield, like, do I like Xhaka being there? No, but Xhaka Partey was perfectly serviceable back half of last season. The thing that gets you points is having an elite attacker. But when you've put so much money into Aubameyang and Willian's contract and you're kind of stuck, then you block your path to make that sort of signing. So I agree that, like, maybe it would be better off. It would be better off if they went and got, like, that game changing attacker. But I'm not sure that game changing attacker is, one, available this summer, two, available to Arsenal, or three, doable with the finances they've got. I think it might have to be next year when Lacazette leaves, if he doesn't go this summer. When Aubameyang is, like, maybe a year older, you can then kind of talk about shifting him out. I think William will go at some point. Like, right now, I think it's really hard to find the space in the squad. And so I think a 22-year-old Odegaard, who I thought was really good last season, and certainly, like you say, has a lot more to give, is probably a sensible move. And what I don't understand is Arsenal fans turning their noses up at players who are better than our team currently is.
Exactly what I was going to say. Like, look at the team that Arsenal had to put out against Brentford and tell me Odegaard would not be an improvement in some area of that side. He absolutely would improve that side. And I think, to come back to your point, Sam, about comparing them to, you know, City and Chelsea, United, Liverpool, I think Arsenal have got to be a little bit more realistic amongst who they're contending for that battle with. I think the realistic push for Arsenal is to try and finish fifth at best this season. And to finish fifth, you're competing with Leicester and Tottenham potentially. I think that you can have as good a summer as Tottenham without signing a superstar or a megastar. You can have as good a summer as Leicester without signing a megastar. Leicester have proven that with smart, small recruitment, that they can improve gradually over time. And I think it's totally unrealistic to imagine one player, even a superstar, coming in and saying that it's going to lift Arsenal to being Premier League title contenders.
Oh, yeah, definitely not.
They've got to be smart and recruit slightly younger, like they're doing with Odegaard and Ben White and Lokonga, and say that that pushes them from fifth, and then those players develop a year older, and then you can start bringing in a player like James Maddison potentially, or a striker that's going to be a bit more all-round, I would say. Let's say Lautaro Martinez or something didn't sign that contract and came in when they finished fifth. That takes them to four. Like, it's got to be a gradual process. Arsenal have tried to sign tall bust players for the last 3 years.
Yes.
In the hope that they're going to win a title in the next four, and it's not worked once. I think they've got to play the long game.
I don't even think Maddison is really better than Odegaard. Like, I don't. Like, I mean, I like...
No, but
I
think this prim, impact, this prim proven. He would have prim more proven. Of an immediate impact yeah. that,
well,
than
Ødegaard. If he's fit, we hope so. But his season last year, even when he was fit, wasn't that great. He's never really had numbers better than Ødegaard. Like, I like that. I think he's an above average shooter from range. And I do think he's capable of being better than he was last season. But even if you look at his numbers from the season before, they're not all that. And they're certainly not twice as much money as Ødegaard. Good. Like, I think if you... I suppose the missed opportunity for me was less like someone like Maddison and more somebody like Buendia, who I think could play a variety of positions. Like Ødegaard, he can play off the right, but he's really a number 10. Maddison is a number 10. Like, the good thing about Buendia is you could play him as a number 10 or as a straight up winger. And I think that that's a flexibility you'd like. But given the price limit, like, it looks like we're going to get Ødegaard for less than Villa paid for Buendia. And I think, okay, well, that's kind of all right. But to go back to the thing about Aubameyang.
Yeah.
I thought he was kind of finished over the first half of last season. But now I'm actually reasonably bullish about his goal scoring chances this year if he gets on the pitch.
That's what I'm
saying. You know, because like after Christmas, before Christmas, he was taking 1.9 shots a game and 0.3 XG per game, which is basically finished. After Christmas, it was 2.5 shots, but it was 0.7 XG a game, which is like a world-class number. And I was like, this is still not a great Arsenal side. Like, so he was putting numbers up when he went to centre-forward in the 4-2-3-1. And I think even if he drops down from that a little bit this season, he's probably likely to get more than 12 goals. Like, I think betting on him to get 15, 16 is perfectly reasonable. Because Arsenal are going to be more creative this season than they've been in the couple of years before it. I don't know. If he stays on the pitch, I'm actually quite bullish about him, which is not to say I think, oh, Arsenal are great. This is not just me being like an Arsenal fan. I think we should probably sell Aubameyang if we can. But
I don't
like,
know. I don't
you
know.
Were right on the contract as well. So pat on the back, FC Van Straten, because that was a big shout, mate.
Yeah.
I've got to disagree with you lot, though. I think it might not be under... Yeah, he might just hit 12 league goals in it. Because last season, let's be realistic, he only scored 10 goals, 2 were penalties. This season, we've seen he missed a game against Brentford because of sickness, He's missing. He's probably going to miss the game against... You know what I mean? He's probably going to miss the game against Chelsea as well. And this is your club captain, do you know what I mean? Like, that's that type of energy that it puts throughout the team, the fans, is not a good look. And also, this year we've got the African Cup of Nations. Yeah. He's going to miss a majority of the season with that. And Arteta doesn't even seem to...
He's not going to miss a majority of the season. He plays for Gabon.
Not majority,
he's going to miss like 2 games. He's not going to the final of AFCON, Sam.
But even at that, he's going to be away from the squad again. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's like he's going to have these inconsistencies in the squad. And it's just not a good look. And you can kind of tell when Arteta talks about him, it's not like positive. You never hear him saying stuff that is like, yeah, my captain, don't worry, he's going to be back next week. He's going to lead the lads. It's always like, he's all right. Or he's going to be back in a few weeks. Or we don't really... And it's just that type of energy, I just don't think is something that we're used to with Aubameyang, especially before he signed his contract. Do you know what I mean? And I guess he still does, like, from his interview, he said he wants to be an Arsenal legend. He wants to be an icon for the club. But since he signed the contract, I haven't seen anything in terms of the way he plays and in terms of the way he like works for the team. Obviously, with the signing of Ben White, you're gonna play a bit different. And I don't know if Arteta really sees Aubameyang as that striker that can play in that system. That's why there's been rumours of him going to Barcelona with that swap deal with Coutinho and him not being in the team. So it's strange, man. I don't know. I think he could get just under 12 goals.
I think you're right and wrong there. Like, I think if Aubameyang's at the club, Arteta will play him. But I do think that when Arteta looks for a new striker, I think he's looking for a better version of Lacazette rather than a better version of Aubameyang. Mm. I think he wants that guy who links play, who defends really high. I mean, just to play devil's advocate on this, I agree that with all the missing games and stuff, I agree with potentially, you know, if Arsenal are pressing more and stuff, then maybe Aubameyang's not the right guy. But also, you think how bad autumn was last year. I think it's unlikely to be quite that bad again. And also, he did have malaria last season. It wasn't like he was there every game. So, I mean, you could argue even if he misses AFCON, if he comes back fit, it's better than coming back with malaria.
I do think that striker situation is a problem, though, for Arsenal.
Yes,
like
definitely.
A problem that's going under the radar quite badly as well. And Ødegaard obviously fills a bit of that creative void that we've spoken about all summer. But I watched Balogun in that Brentford game. He's clearly
he
not ready
bullied.
For senior starts at a like, consistent basis, a la maybe like a Mason Greenwood. I don't think he's physically developed enough to do that. I think he might have an impact off the bench and he might start to grow into the side that way. But throwing him in the deep end, let's say next Saturday, or is it Sunday, whenever it is, against Chelsea, and saying, Balogun, you're going to be up front against Chelsea's back three, I think is just next stupid, to be honest with you. Martinelli obviously is not going to be played through the middle at this stage. If Arteta liked Martinelli through the middle, we would have seen him line up through the middle, I think, against Brentford, to be honest with you, and he would have tried to utilise somebody else wide. And Lacazette and Aubameyang, transferitis, Lacazette's got 1 year left on his contract. I think that is the area they really could have done with focusing in on this summer, especially with a player like Tammy Abraham available on the market. Might not have been perfect for Arsenal's new system, but at least it would have been another young player coming into the club that could improve and Arteta could mould to the player he wants to be. Because Lacazette and Aubameyang feel like they're leaving. Balogun feels slightly too raw. Martinelli feels like he's going to play on the left. I feel like there's a big void developing up front for Arsenal.
I think this is, again, like what we're talking about with just like terrible transfer business, terrible contracts. Like,
the planet.
I think
you can't sell anyone.
Well, yeah. And I mean, there are Arsenal fans who complain about Lacazette and Aubameyang over the last couple of years as if it was a problem that we had like two decent strikers. The problem wasn't that. The problem was like the utter lack of depth in the rest of attack. But now, when we've given Aubameyang this big contract and we can't shift Lacazette out because of COVID, suddenly we're in an issue. We're in a state where that position is blocked and it's going to be really hard to like bring somebody in at that position. I mean, I think that Martinelli, probably one of the best case scenarios for Arsenal season is that Martinelli explodes. And I do think that Martinelli, I'd put him on the same level as guys like Saka and Greenwood. Like I think he's that good. Like, I think it's entirely possible. I think he genuinely might be our best attacker, like if he's fit.
He just
plays
needs to
a
stay injury-free as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
He needs to stay injury-free.
Yeah, which is a big part of his development. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Arsenal are just bad at planning, and I completely agree that Arteta makes these weird decisions. Like, he's one of those people who played in the Prem during, like, the Ferguson era, and I wonder if he's articulated a lot of the bads. If he's absorbed a lot of the bad stuff from Ferguson, which is just like, I will be like really harsh and really like blunt, and he hasn't really realized that like you need to understand when that's a good idea and when it's a bad idea.
Yeah, it hasn't worked with Arsenal, and like, don't get it twisted, losing to Brentford on the first day of the season, it's like, it's bad, but it's not the worst thing. Like, I think there was only a few teams that played away that actually won in the first game, so that's not the worst case. But it's just the fact that coming from that, now you're still saying that Laka and Aubameyang are unlikely to play against Chelsea. You've signed Odegaard, fans are 50-50 on him. There's few rumours that you're going to sign Aouar because he's taken a real stand and telling Leon that I just let me go. So I think that could also be a decent signing for Arsenal as well. But in terms of that front area, I think If you don't get at least one of them on board, like fully arm round Aubameyang, arm round Lacazette, and say, lads, I need you. Like, I need you to lift the team because they are senior players. I need you to lift the team, to lift the fans, so we can actually look like we're trying to do something this season. Then I don't know what can happen if that don't happen.
Yeah, agreed. Well, you're taking the under or the dead on, which I think is a bit of a cop out. Joe and I think, are taking the marginally over on this.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So shall we move on to a club, one of the very, very few clubs in football who make Arsenal look reasonably competent? We're moving on to Barcelona. Now, Barcelona, I've decided to ballpark this at Barcelona will finish third, which I think is like kind of...
Kind.
Interesting. Okay. Right. So, Joe, I'm going to assume you're taking the under on Barca.
No, I'm taking the over. I think they'll comfortably finish over the third spot. Like, I think you could have had it second as like, are they going to win it as the over and under? That was my sort of exasperation. I think that even without Lionel Messi, they are still going to do some serious damage to La Liga this season. Obviously, Lionel Messi's 39 goal contributions aren't going to be covered by Memphis Depay alone, but I think he will be a significant upgrade on some of the other players that are left in that squad, a la Martin Braithwaite.
Oh my God.
I think Barcelona, to be honest with you, I know Atletico Madrid won the league last year. I still think Barcelona are probably the best side in the league.
Yes.
And they did fall short. I understand that. I do think they're probably the second best team in the league at the moment, to be honest with you. Real Madrid have also had, so far, a really poor summer, in my opinion. I don't think they've done nearly enough. If they get Mbappe, that changes. But they are playing a tour bus game with Mbappe of selling the entire squad for one young superstar at this stage. So it's not as if they've gone out and had some sort of huge spending spree that's resulted in a number of young, exciting players come into the club. I think Barcelona, on paper, have had the better summer, to be honest with you. I understand they've lost Messi, which is a huge, huge pull out of all of their numbers. But, you know, Depay is a good addition to Barcelona. Pedri is a year older. De Jong is a year more developed in that Ronald Koeman system. I think Barcelona are going to finish second this season, so I'm going to say over.
No, Pedri's going to finish the season with no legs, though. Like, Pedri...
I know, mate. 73 games he played last year.
Absolutely insane. I don't know what's going on with him. But, I mean, what I find strange, just to, you know, digress for a minute, is that nobody's tested them with a little bid for De Jong or Pedri.
I know. Can't believe that.
Why is that?
I don't know, because I feel like they would be probably... especially Laporta after that press conference. I know that he's going to be desperate to keep the sort of untradeables, as he's called them, your De Jongs, your Pedris. But if somebody came in with like a 70, 80 million euro bid, yes, that's like a game-changing fund for this Barcelona wage system. And it surprised me that that hasn't happened. I think the only reason that hasn't happened is because nobody else across Europe's got any money.
Yeah, that's so what I was going to say. I don't think any team's capable of doing that. So I think
United went out and did that with Real Madrid and Varane, and it would require somebody else to go and do that who needs a defensive midfielder. And I guess like Chelsea, some people say they do, but overall they've spent their money on Lukaku. Man City don't really.
I don't know. I feel like De Jong would be the perfect signing for Man City.
Do you think?
Yeah.
They're obviously more interested in signing Kane with that fund, aren't they?
Yeah. No, I get that, but like I just kind of look at them and I think, if you do have this money, and you obviously do, like De Jong is kind of an almost unmissable opportunity for Man City. Then you've got Rodri and De Jong as your central midfield options going forward. Otherwise, they're going to be in a position where they're starting Fernandinho. Fernandinho, the other day,
Moura was onto him.
He was so bad. Like, as in... Yeah. That's kind of misleading.
He wasn't so bad.
When he's near the ball, he's still really good. But what you see so often now with Fernandinho is he's not near the ball because he just can't keep up with play anymore. And like, it's not a criticism really, because he is very old. Like, but I just thought, I can't believe that Man City, I understand they want to get Grealish, I understand they want to get Kane, but I can't understand them going into another season with Rodri, Gundogan and Fernandinho as their three central midfield options. I do not understand.
But that was always going to be the case when they gave Fernandinho the new deal. I think they decided they were going for other options when they gave him the 1 year contract extension, because if they wanted to go for the Fernandinho replacement, they would have let him go in the same manner they let Sergio Aguero go, I think.
And Silva.
I think it's a really, really weird squad building from Pep. Really.
Yeah, but overall, I just to take it back to Barcelona, I think Memphis Depay covers maybe 50%, 60% of Messi's output, which is like, what, 20 to 25 league goals this season, or like 20 to 25 league goal involvements, I should say, sorry. So I think they're going to be fine and finish second, so I'm going to go over the third space in La Liga.
Sam, come on.
See, this is why it's mad, because I don't want to be the guy that's always going under, yeah, but I think you're just underestimating how much of a loss Messi is. Like, fam, Did you not see the fans outside of the club in tears?
Of course, bro. I know how big of a loss he is, but the rest of the league is also shot to bits.
No, but I hear what you're saying. But at the same time, they finished third last year with Messi in the squad. Messi covered... He was responsible for 46% of their goals. And now they're relying on Braithwaite, yeah? And a 30-year-old Griezmann. I think Griezmann's obviously going to get more freedom and probably play in a similar role to Messi when he was at Barca. But at the same time, can they depend on Griezmann to do that role? Obviously, Depay is coming in and he's hit the ground running in pre-season, scored a few goals. But I don't know, man. The rest of their squad, they've still got Jordi Alba, 32 years old. He's still starting in that squad and he's not the greatest anymore. I agree,
but they outscored the rest of La Liga by like 20 goals last season. Even if you take Messi's 20 goals out of that, that brings them down to sort of top goal scorer territory in La Liga. And that's without adding like a Memphis Depay in there. I agree if they can tighten the defence up, that's a problem. But even then, it just brings them down towards like league average territory. By expected points, they were like 10, 12 points clear of the league last year. And they obviously faltered because of... like their finishing was turd for 90% of the season.
I also think Atleti are not that good. Like, they won the league last season. I swear that was mostly because like Llorente managed to score and assist like 20 goals from about 4xG or something mental. Like everything he hit went in all season long. They ended up with a goal difference of plus 42. Their expected goal difference was plus 20. What is going on at that club? I mean, I guess it's Oblak as well. But
they only conceded 25 goals.
It's mental. Like I just look at them and I just think, I don't really see it. I look at Real Madrid and I think they'll probably be better just because nobody scored a goal last season except for Benzema. So that'll probably like help a little bit, but again they're still like, oh, we're going to start Bale who's 32, we're going to start Benzema who's 33, we're going to start Modric when he's fit, he's 35. I just think
they didn't look that bad though in their first league game. I watched some of the highlights here. They didn't look that bad, and I think
because they're still playing a terrible league, Sam. Like it's like it's just like it's like just dropping, like I don't know, man. It's like me having a fight with like Conor McGregor or something. Like it's just like that is what it's like. Like these teams come up from the second division of Spain, and it's like Joe and Sonny and Templeman like going to play at the Bernabeu and getting getting absolutely destroyed. Like I just don't understand it. Like yes, they've lost Varane and Ramos this summer, so they're basically going to like Alaba and Militao as a backline. I still think that's okay, but it's not. It's not amazing or anything. And Alaba actually started at left back in the first game of the season.
But you're forgetting the key thing at Madrid right now. And you lot are going to try and bore me. But Hazard's back. Not going to lie to you. He's had a very bad time at Madrid during his time in Spain. Yeah. But I think he's genuinely... I saw a few interviews him talking about his ankle injuries. And I think he's over it. From the assist that he gave Benzema in their first league game, he looks free again. Do you know what I mean? And I think he doesn't have that much pressure that he had when he first signed for them, and he's not the type of guy that deals with pressure that well as well. So I think if he gets a few run of games, ankle's all right, Benzema's obviously gonna score goals regardless. If they can get a good relationship going, I think Real Madrid are probably my favorites to win the league.
Sam, stop simping for a guy who left your club. Like,
no, I love him.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. I love him. Like, he's old. He's rubbish now. Like, I don't know. Look, but we're not saying like Barcelona have to finish above everybody. What I do think though is that for them to finish lower than third, a team like Sociedad or Sevilla have to really, really get their shit together. And I think that's possible, but I'm not sure that it's likely. And even obviously Messi, the biggest loss there could possibly be in football. But you look at that Barcelona squad and you're not like, my God, how will this team do anything? You still look at it and you think, yeah, this is a pretty good squad. like they'll still be a decent football club, even if they're not like, you know, Barcelona with Messi good. So like, I don't know, man. Like I feel like there are big concerns. Like, yes, Jordi Alba starting still at this point, and they've got rid of his backup. They've sold him to Leeds, right? Junior Firpo. And they could yet lose a lot more of their depth. Like Puig could go, Moriba could go. I think they're trying to sell Longley, but can't find anyone to buy him. Like that, they're going to be fatigued over the season. But I still look at them and I think, yeah, I think that broadly they're going to be fine. I do agree with Joe. I think they were the best side in Spain last year. And even if Ancelotti can improve Real Madrid, I think Barcelona I'd still back them to finish in the top two.
Yeah, I think I think under's a bit. I think under's a bit tight. I'm sitting on the fence again. It's a third or second.
Oh my god!
So
under third is an extreme. Like, there's not that many good teams in La Liga. Like, come on, like, I think third or second in it for Barca.
All right, well, we should have given you some time before this podcast, Sam, to find your balls so that you could actually say Barcelona are going to finish fifth. Come on.
We can't just all agree anyway. I've got to give you the points as to why they could potentially finish outside of the top three. You know what I mean? I'm doing you a service.
I agree. I can see the path to Barcelona being rubbish. I can see the path to Barcelona finishing like fourth or fifth. I just don't think it's the likeliest outcome. That's what I'm saying. Mm. So shall we move back to the Premier League for this one then? Because I think...
Yes.
I wanted to talk a bit about the Premier League title race because I've been seeing a lot, especially after a very impressive win at the weekend for Man United, saying that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's team are potential title contenders. Now, I think that's maybe a bit generous because as much as I love Leeds definitely. And Bielsa, I do think that Leeds at home is perhaps one of the easiest games for a top club in the Premier League. Like, we beat them like 4-2 at home.
Especially
or something
United at home, yeah. Who love space in fast transitions, which Leeds... without Calvin Phillips, give you in abundance because they want to play 1v1.
Okay, so, before we get into that then, let me just say that my over-under here, Man United to finish above Liverpool, which seems to be a very common prediction. A lot of people are saying Liverpool fourth, United third or second. Who wants to go first?
I'll say over. I'll back it. I'm going to say over. I said over in my predictions and I'll stick by it, but I think it's going to be extremely close between those sides. I think it's nothing to separate them, really. I do think that Man United are improving quickly under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and now actually have a real identity to their game, which is something that was lacking for a long, long time at Manchester United, especially under Louis van Gaal and Jose Mourinho. I think the attacking setup that Ollie's got now rivals anyone in the league. I think that Jadon Sancho, Rashford, Greenwood, Cavani, Bruno, Pogba, I think rivals anybody in terms of creativity, output, ability to finish, movement off the ball, movement on the ball is really exciting. I think the defensive unit was actually one of Ollie's stronger points in terms of coaching. I definitely think he improved Manchester United's defensive setup. You can see that in the numbers over the last couple of years, especially Harry Maguire's consistency has been key. Luke Shaw's made huge strides under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in terms of just his all-round ability, to be quite frank. He's just a beast at the moment. If you go past him, it looks like he's in second gear to go back at you. I heard somebody say that he looks like he's playing football whistling the other day. It's 100% true. He looks like he's just jogging about and making everything look so easy. We do still have a huge issue in that defensive midfield pivot. Yeah. I think we need one lights-out defensive midfielder. Let's say you drop Wilfred Ndidi into that side, then I think you've got a real shot at winning the Premier League title. United aren't going to do that. United are going to back Fred and McTominay because Ollie loves those two against the big teams. And I think against those smaller sides, the sides that are going to sit deep with a real low block, you're going to probably see just one pivot. And that's what Varane's going to allow United to do because we can push 10 yards further up the pitch without Lindelof's lack of speed. So United are going to make strides this season. But I think those strides are maybe limited at 85 to 90 points. I think Liverpool will be in a similar sort of territory, to be honest with you. With Andy Robertson missing the first 6 weeks of the season, I thought Tsimikas looked pretty good against Norwich, though it has to be said. I think Van Dijk will take a while to ease back into the side. Joel Matip never puts a foot wrong. I think they've lost one of 44 games that he started for Liverpool, which is bloody impressive. But I just think that there's still question marks hanging over that Liverpool side. How quickly does Van Dijk come back? When's Robertson going to come back? That midfield three that we saw against Norwich probably isn't going to get you a league title. So Thiago needs to come back into the side pretty rapidly, doesn't he? Is the front three going to be able to perform of 2019-20 levels? Or are we going to see a continued drop-off from Roberto Firmino with Diogo Jota maybe adding in those extra goals? Sadio Mane can't perform like he did last season either. He needs to refine some of the form he showed in 19-20. So I think there's a few question marks over the Liverpool side. But the squad is so good that it's still going to be around the 90-point mark. I'm going to go like Man United 87 points, Liverpool 86 points, and then like Chelsea and City will be on like 95s, I think.
Oh, I was about to say, like, when you said 85 to 90 point range, yeah. So you're predicting like the strongest top four in Premier League history this year?
Yeah, I think I do think the top four is significantly better than everybody else in the league. Like,
well, so do I, but like, even if the top four were all above 80 points, that would be like historically great. Like, that just doesn't happen, man.
Well, all right, let's drop it down to 80-85. But even so, like, I think you'd be about 1 to 2 point separation between the two sides.
Okay, okay, Sam, do you have any riposte to that?
I think it's tight, man. I think it's. I agree with Joe in terms of how close the points are going to be this year. I think the top four teams are clearly better than the rest. And I think from the first game that we saw from Liverpool, I think Van Dijk was such a big miss last year. And we saw how bad their defence missed him. And him coming back and them having Konate and Matip back from injury, Joe Gomez, the depth in their defence as well. Simiskas, he had a good game against Norwich, even though he got burnt a few times by Aarons. But I'll just put that down to getting used to the league. But I think they look a lot more assured with Van Dijk in the squad. And he didn't really get tested. And obviously he's going to get tested a lot this season. But a big problem that they had last season is that the way they play, they basically got burnt out. And you know the way, how close the seasons were, and they didn't have that much of a pre-season. Everyone was saying Liverpool style of play is basically the reason why they've struggled this season. And I think them having a full pre-season, Mane came out and said that him having a full pre-season was so good for him. Jota having a full pre-season. And I think if they can get up and running and kind of... Because I still don't know how they're gonna fully set up. I don't know if Matip and Van Dijk are gonna play every game together. Obviously, Joe Gomez is back. Konate, he's definitely gonna play a few games, and they're playing in every competition. But I think they've got such better squad depth, and they were only 5 points behind United last year. So with those additions to the squad, and Mane maybe back on form, Firmino scored in his first game, Salah just doing a madness as usual, I think it will be very, very tight. I don't know. I want to say, I think Liverpool have kind of gone under the radar because they haven't made that many signings. So obviously United have made signings, Sancho, Varane. You saw how excited everyone was after their game against Leeds. But I think that, like Joe said, that game is perfect for United. It's a perfect showcase game for United to just flex their muscles and do a madness. And to be fair, the next few games for United are actually quite calm. Like, they should win their next few games. So if they can get a run of wins, and Liverpool, I think they've got they're playing a few teams in the top 10, so their games are going to be a bit more difficult than United. So it depends on who has a better run of games, I think, at the beginning of the season, and then maybe halfway through when they start playing each other. It's just going to be interesting. Like, those United versus Liverpool this year is going to be a madness. Like, Liverpool versus Chelsea, Chelsea versus United. I think those games are going to really tell who finishes where.
Interesting. So you think, well, I suppose if everybody is finishing above 80 points, it is going to come down to like those really fine margins,
yeah,
right?
I think it will as well. But I agree with Sam.
My slight... To bring a note of caution into like the kind of positivity about Man United, I will say that last season they had about 60 XG and they scored 73 goals. So they could improve their underlying attacking performance by quite a lot, but not really improve their actual performance, if that makes sense. You know, if that comes back down to earth, that finishing. I do think guys like... I think Greenwood is a plus finisher. I think that Bruno is a plus finisher. So I'd expect them to slightly overperform expected goals. But overperforming by 13 is a lot. Also think that despite that terrible season, like you say, Liverpool within 5 points of them had better underlying numbers than them. And I do think they've got better depth, especially in midfield and up front, like having Jota there, like that is, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I don't think Mane will be as bad this season. Firmino, I'm a bit concerned about because I think he's had 3 seasons now of underperforming his numbers. So that's like a bit of a warning sign. But I also think you're right that Liverpool... It's been 18 months now of this extremely like tiring COVID schedule, and they've been the Euros, and Liverpool's style is much more wearing than Man United's. Like, it always sounds like a criticism when I say this, but I feel like Man United are quite an old fashioned side. Like, they don't press as intensely as some of the other sides in the league. They're much happier to like counter But that, I think, is sensible when you know that you're facing compressed seasons and also when you've got the talent that they have. So, I don't know, man. I find this a really difficult one. I'm inclined to back Liverpool. I'm inclined to back Liverpool because I do think that, like, I think Varane's a world-class centre-back, but I don't think he's as good as Van Dijk. I think Sancho's a world-class attacker, but I think he'll probably take a little bit of time to bed in. And I think that Liverpool still just have an excellent team there that kind of got done by a bit of bad luck, mostly last season. So I don't know. I think I'd take the under on this.
You're going under. I'll stick with over. It's going to be so tight to call the top of the league. But then, like, there's always one team that fucks it and falls out. But, like, we've all thought it's going to be, like, a nailed-on top four of this season. So, like, I don't know which of the sides it's going to be, but it could easily be one of these two. Yeah. I just don't see a world in which that Chelsea side and that City side, with the depth they've got, like, underperform massively. Whereas you never know, do you? It always feels like Leicester worm their way in somehow.
But then they don't. But then they end up not, like, managing. Like, yeah. I don't know. I do see where you're coming from. I think somebody will, like, have a slightly disappointing campaign in that top four. But I think that because those four teams are such a step ahead of the rest of the league, I think that United or City or whatever could afford to, like, get unlucky and lose 10 points, and I still think they'll finish above Leicester, Arsenal and Spurs, who are the next best teams in the league. Like, I just don't see any of those sides seriously troubling them. Spurs have a great squad. I think Spurs... I don't know why people have been down on Spurs' squad in the past. They keep hold of Kane, especially. But I still don't see them as anywhere near these sides, right?
Yeah, nah. I think they had a lot more to do this window, and they just haven't really... It's similar to Arsenal, to be fair. They've been linked with so many players. They were linked with, I think, Pau Torres. They were linked with him. The club said yes, but Torres was like, nah, I'm not trying to play for Spurs. And they've had that quite a lot this season. So I think with the squad that they have, it's better than Arsenal. And Leicester are always in the conversation. But I think Leicester are so used to being, like, just being outside of the top four. So I think they're probably going to see themselves favourites to finish in fifth. And I think it's for Spurs and Arsenal, they're sixth and seventh. And yeah, man, even... Actually, no, let me not say that because I was going to say Everton, but then
Everton are going to be effective under Rafa Benitez, though.
I think they'll be better, though.
Yeah,
they'll be good.
But finish mid-table still.
Yeah, I just think they're too thin to really challenge those sides. Like, that's my issue with them. Like, and Richarlison has had a similar situation to Pedri, right? Like, the guy just has played every minute.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What do you think about Villa, though? Do you think that they can... Because obviously the signings that they've had, I think they've had the best transfer window outside of the top, let's say, six, even four.
Even with
fair.
Losing Grealish?
Yeah. And I don't particularly like the Ings move. As much as I like Danny Ings, I don't think it's that sensible in the long term.
Really? I think that's a good option because Watkins was that striker last year that he got into such good positions, but he wasn't scoring as many as he could have.
But he's so good, Sam.
Yeah, no, he is good. I like him. But I think Danny Ings is that striker that you give him a few chances, he's going to bag.
But
you're
paying.
I mean?
But you are paying, like, what is it? Like, basically 30 mil for a relatively old, relatively injury-prone player. Like, I love Danny Ings, and if he stays fit, great. But, like, I personally wouldn't have done it. Like, Watkins has got signs of being a really, really amazing striker, I think. Like, I think Buendia and Bailey... both fantastic signings, but then, like, I don't know, it was 50-50 on their business when there were rumors they were offering 25 mil for James Ward-Prowse. I was like, I would definitely not do that. Like, well, I don't know, man. I still think they need some more depth in defensive midfield, to be honest with you. I'd have spent money on that over Ings.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they definitely need another DM. But I don't hate Villa's business. I don't love it either. I think that they'll be comfortable in that mid-table zone, though. I think they're very, very much a settled Premier League side now, and it might take them a little bit of time to adapt, Bailey in particular, because we've seen Buendia be able to put up those chances in the Premier League before. So I think like Danny Ings is going to score 10 to 15 goals probably.
Yeah.
And that's what they've bought him for. And it might be a slight overpayment, but they've just risked that to stay, like, to guarantee league survival, which Danny Ings absolutely does.
I think this might be a matchup. I think they can push for the European Conference League spots in it.
Oh yeah, they can.
Yeah, they can definitely.
They can.
They definitely can. Yeah, yeah, for
sure.
But
I wouldn't back them to finish above Arsenal, Leicester, Spurs.
I think they're in around sort of Leeds, West Ham, Everton, aren't they? Like,
yeah.
I think maybe Brighton might sneak up into those sort of zones as well. If the forwards start hitting the back of the net.
Me too. Just to touch on something, like, because Sam, you talking about Spurs squad has reminded me that I missed this while I was on paternity leave, and I would actually like to ask your opinions on it, because there have been rumours that Man City have tried to sweeten the deal for Harry Kane by offering Laporte and Gabriel Jesus at different points. I was wondering if there's any combination of money and those players which would tempt you. Like, would you consider it? If they were like, here's like Laporte and Jesus, would you consider that for Kane?
I think I would, man. I think Spurs need to really think about life after Kane, and I think they're just not thinking about it enough. Like, obviously, from when he did that interview with Gary Neville, we all saw what he said about him wanting to move on, even put a price on himself. And I think that 120 mil with a player like Gabby Jesus or Laporte, or even both, I think that's probably one of the best deals
that's
you can
nuts.
Get.
That's nuts. 120 mil plus Gabby Jesus and Laporte. You're in dreamland.
They're not going to do that. On. I'm assuming that they'll give you, like, if they give you Gabby Jesus, I assume they're going to give you like 50 mil.
No, come on, Pat. Have a day off. It's 120 plus a player like Gabby Jesus, surely.
Yeah, but that's not bad. Plus Gabby Jesus. Then that's a no-brainer. I definitely do that.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't even think Levy looks at that and thinks, yeah, why not? Like, I think he's so hell-bent on keeping Kane. And obviously, he signed that long-term contract. But at the same time, I think 120 mil and
a player I've been such a person that has been like, you've got to keep Kane. If you can keep Kane, you've got to keep Kane. But it is now getting to the stage.
It's toxic, man. It's going to get toxic.
Not even so much that. It is now getting to the stage where it's almost like you didn't win anything with Kane.
Mm.
You could have £120 million in the bank, plus a player, potentially. Let's say it is Gabby Jesus, who I don't think is realistic, because I don't think he would want to take the step backwards to Tottenham Hotspur. And you weren't winning stuff with Kane. You get £120 in the bank, and you've got a striker through the door, and you can reinvest that across the board squad. Like, you were finishing like seventh with Kane.
Mm.
Like, what's the worst that can possibly happen in this situation now is that you dropped 10th, which obviously is a fallback, but then you can reinvest that money next summer. Like, I think it is now getting to the stage where 120, 150 million pounds you've actually got to consider.
Just do it, man.
It's just becoming a first.
I guess my concern, though, would be like whether there's somebody out there you can go and get. So, for instance, if the Lautaro Martinez thing was like just waiting there, and it was like we sell Kane and we turn around like half of that money on Lautaro, I genuinely think that's a no-brainer. I think that's such an easy decision. Lautaro is actually quite like a young Harry Kane. Like, I think he's one of the best young strikers in the world. Like, that would have made perfect sense, and you'd still have money to go and get another centre back or something else. But the problem is, Lautaro looks like he doesn't want to go. Tammy Abraham's already gone. Alexander Isak has already signed a new long-term contract. I agree Gabby Jesus probably doesn't want to go to Spurs. So if you do sell Kane for that money, who are you going and getting? That's my one thing. Because, I mean, again, if you say to me, oh, well, you can turn it around and get Calvert-Lewin or something, again, maybe I consider it. But I truly don't know who Spurs can get if they sell Kane at this point in the window. That's my only issue.
Yeah, I heard Doogie suggest Dominic Calvert-Lewin on Sky Sports yesterday. And I thought it's an interesting shout.
It is. Yeah, I never thought about that.
Does Calvert-Lewin move from Everton to Spurs? Like, not a sideways step, but it's like a, it's like a, I don't know, like a 15-degree step, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
It is a little step up, like it is a step up. Like, let's be honest, and I think it will definitely be good for the type of squad that they have, because I was more thinking, okay, cool, if they can't get a striker, maybe Son goes in the middle, and then they possibly get another wide man. But then I was thinking, who could they even get as well that would make sense for the Spurs squad? So it's, I think they've left it really late. Like, they should have been speaking to Kane as soon as he came back from the Euros, been having conversations with him, and yeah, we've heard things about this gentleman agreement and stuff like that, but like, really and truly, okay, cool, how much will it cost for me to leave? I don't really know how many conversations that they've, like, have City actually put a offer down that has been rejected?
It's not Spurs' fault, is it? Like, Spurs obviously want to keep the player, and City haven't bid enough, so yeah. It's not their fault it's now running late in the window. If City come in on deadline day of £170 million, then accept it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is what it is at that stage, because I just can't see how you turn down money like that in this current market.
Well, if you can't spend it, though, it's like, so for instance, if you sell Kane for that this year, you have that money for next year. And I agree that, like, it doesn't really cost Spurs anything. Like, they're not going to, like, lose out on Champions League football because they've lost Kane. They're not going to get Champions League football anyway. But if you get it this summer and you can only spend it next summer, the money's going to be worth less next year as, like, clubs rebound from their financial crisis. Whereas selling him at the beginning of the window, and then you're one of the richest clubs in Europe, like, that would have actually been, like, a pretty good situation.
But everybody then knows that and runs you up, don't
they? Well, sure, but like, there's only so much they can run you up if they're desperate for cash.
Like, to sell, yeah.
They could have gone and got, like, you know, an Aouar and a striker. Like, I think if you'd got in on Martinez before Lukaku had gone, then you'd have had an interesting shot. And as much as he says he doesn't want to go to Spurs, Spurs can offer him a big salary bump on what he gets at Inter. I mean, even there might be outside the box options. Like, I don't know if this would be the case, but maybe like Chelsea could be tempted into a Timo Werner sale or something, like, for significant money. Like, I don't really know, but it might be worth at least exploring those options, right?
They've got other problems as well, though, Tottenham. Like, this Ndombele situation is really starting to bubble away, I think. Mm. Obviously, being left out of the matchday squad against Manchester City. He's not favoured by what I've read by Nuno. He seems to be quite homesick, upset at the fact that Aurier and Sissoko are leaving the club, or potentially leaving the club. And I would be slightly worried about that. He's one of Spurs' top earners. He's on $200,000 a week. He's got to be up there amongst their record signings, right, in terms of immediate fees. I think that if they can't, like, deal with that situation this summer, you're losing a significant amount of money for a player that should be one of your key members of the team. Like, I think Ndombele's situation needs to be resolved quickly.
Yeah, well, at least it looks like they'll rehabilitate Dele Alli, which I'm really glad about. Like, it looks like admitted it is against Man City, and people have different game plans against Man City than they do in all their general games. But the role that Ali had, which was just like getting from box to box, basically making runs.
He looks really good.
It's perfect for him. It's perfect for him. Mm. And I think we all maintain that, like, Dele Alli is probably one of the most talented, like, English midfielders around. There should be a role for him in this Spurs side.
Mm.
Yeah,
definitely.
He did get sent back to MK Dons at one stage by Riyad Mahrez.
Yeah, but that happens. That happens, doesn't it?
Hey, Pat, one more thing, though. One more thing, because me and Joe were talking about this the other day, yeah? And this is just about Chelsea and obviously the signing that we made with Lukaku. I put, that Lukaku coming back...
Just stressed me out.
I thought Lukaku coming back is a redemption tour, yeah? Because obviously when he came to the Premier League the first time as a Chelsea player, things didn't work out. Obviously, worked out at Everton and West Brom.
He's got nothing to prove, bro. Lukaku has got nothing to prove.
But then, when he went to United, that was a big move again. He wanted to win titles, wanted to win the league. Didn't work out. Went to Serie A. Obviously, we saw what happened there. Now he's coming back. He's coming back to the Premier League to basically be the star man, to win the league with Chelsea. Yeah. Can you not see why I have said that it is a redemption tour? I just want your answer, Pat.
No, it's a redemption tour for Chelsea.
That's exactly what I said, Pat. Those are the exact words I used. No joke, I said it's a redemption tour for Chelsea because you sold him. You f***ed him off for nothing.
But it's
£28 million, Sam. And now you're paying 100 mil for a
guy.
Those are
the exact words I used. 93 to be exact. Redemption tour for Chelsea.
It's an admission. It's an admission that you got it wrong. That is what it is, Sam. There's no other way around it. You had him. You sold him. You then had the option to get him again, and you didn't. And also, actually, if you factor in the money you spent on, say, Morata, if you factor in the money that you spent on, like, other strikers in an attempt to fill this hole, this is probably one of the costliest mistakes in football history. And now he's coming back. And I'm delighted for him. Like, he obviously loves the club. Like, I wish only... Obviously, I hate Chelsea. They're scum. But, like, I wish only good things for Lukaku. I think he's impossible not to like. One of the most intelligent, likeable footballers who also happens to be a world-class striker. Great. But Chelsea should have welcomed him back with a formal apology for all the ways that they fucked him over.
You know why I'm not hearing that? Because it's kind of similar to the Tammy situation, but not as bad, because Tammy obviously got his opportunity in the Premier League, yeah? But at the time he was here, bro, we had Drogba that was still doing bits.
He was 35.
I think he had his opportunity in the Super Cup. Fair enough, I think Jose actually came out and said it wasn't a mistake, but that game kind of pushed him out in a sense, yeah? Now he's coming back. He's coming back to the team that he loves. Coming back to the team that he supports. He said that he needs to play there.
Sam, he was an elite scorer in the Premier League for West Brom and then at Everton when he was a kid. What are you talking about? Just accept that your club is in the wrong and Lukaku is in the right. It's that simple. Chelsea got it wrong. Lukaku didn't fail Chelsea. Chelsea failed him. That is how it worked.
We were always going to reunite. It was always a part of the story.
No, it wasn't.
United checked us originally because he was supposed to come back and then Pogba was in his ear and told him, you know, enjoy it up here in Manchester. But it's not as bad as you're saying it. And I think that it's a redemption tour, isn't it? That's what I'm saying.
Sam, would you say that Paul Pogba is on a redemption tour at United now, then?
It's not the same, though. I told you it's not the same.
Well, United sold him for pittance, absolutely fucked it, and had to buy him back for £90 million after
To be fair, it is kind of a redemption tour because he felt he didn't work out here the first time he came to the Premier League, yeah, for United. I'm not talking about Lukaku being at Everton.
Oh, my God.
But that's why I said it's different because Lukaku was older. He was a bit older. He had a few games for Chelsea.
He scored 113 goals in the league.
Yes, but not for a top. Not for Chelsea.
Oh,
not for Chelsea.
What do you mean not for Chelsea?
This is so mad.
Like, I don't understand this, man. This is like saying if it were a different club.
So bizarre.
If it were a different club. If it were like Arsenal, who'd done this? Who'd like? If Arsenal had gone out this summer and bought back like Gnabry for like 100 mil. Like, I don't think that you'd be saying, oh, it's the player, it's a redemption tour for him. I think you'd be saying this is just evidence that Arsenal are a badly run club. But because it's Chelsea, We made the right decision getting rid of him at the time because we're Chelsea. We only make correct decisions.
No. This is my final point. It wasn't the right decision selling him. We should have put a buyback like we've done for Tammy. We didn't do that. We tried to sign him again when he went to United. It didn't work out. We've signed him now. It didn't work out for him at United. And my thing is, it didn't work out for him in the Premier League where he was at two top clubs. So now he's coming back to the Premier League for a top club where the objectives are always to win the Premier League, the Champions League and all the other trophies. It's different to saying, oh yeah, he scored a bag of goals for Everton and West Brom. Yeah.
He just won the Scudetto two months ago.
The Serie A is different to the Premier League. The Serie A is different to the Premier League. Yeah, that's why I say it's a redemption. Okay.
I'm sorry, so you're saying that Chelsea's standards last season, like, okay, you managed to win the Champions League, like, because Tuchel came in and, like, said, I don't know what Frank Lampard's done here. Like, we could just, like, play some good players and actually win something. We could defend for half a season. That would work. Like, but you were not remotely in the title chase last season. Inter ended, like, what is it, 9 years of Juve winning the Scudetto? But the standards are different. The standards are different at Chelsea. Okay.
I'm not going to argue it anymore. I know what I'm saying. Joe knows what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. But I hear your side in it. It depends on how you look at it. But I think it's a redemption tour for him coming back to Chelsea. And I'm going to keep on
nothing
skiing
to
with that.
Prove. He is such a good player. He has absolutely nothing.
Of course,
to prove
he's a fantastic world class striker, but his story at Chelsea was not that. So that's why I'm saying
no.
It's
the story
tour.
At Chelsea was that like you have a situation where managers know that if they don't win immediately, they're going to lose their jobs, and therefore you constantly lose young talent for below market rate. Yeah, exactly. So it wasn't his fault. He wasn't given the opportunity. That's not his fault. He immediately went to West Brom and absolutely destroyed it. He was so good at West Brom. Oh my God. This is when you were like playing like Drogba, Torres, Eto up front. All of those were rubbish at that stage. Like, and you weren't playing Lukaku. You could have had Lukaku having paid like a pittance for him. You could have had him for his entire prime. Instead, you're buying him at 28 years old for 100 mil after dicking around, like
Euros.
Giving minutes to like Giroud over the last few years. I mean, it's embarrassing,
don't,
Sam.
Don't,
just
don't
accept
do
your embarrassment. Just accept your embarrassment. Just deal with it. Accept your club
Sam,
was wrong.
Sam, you brought up this point as well. You brought up the point.
No,
of the
because, no, because
here.
I just wanted to see what Pat would say. And I thought that, you know, your paternity leave would have brought you round a little bit, but no, you're still the same. It's fine. It's fine.
Look, I am always on Lukaku's side. Always on Lukaku's side. And in this instance, I don't see how anyone can not be, except for you, the ultimate like Chelsea like full kit here in the end, holding up a sign about how Lampard's a traitor because he went to Man City for a season. That's you.
Sam would have been one of the guys in there calling Eden Hazard a rat when Jose Mourinho
was not happy. See, you lot are twisting the story. We're not doing this no more.
All right. Well, I mean, we've gone over an hour. Sam has said something stupid, so I feel like we've covered all our bases. Thank you very much for joining me today, guys. Is there anything you'd like to plug before we say goodbye? Joe, do you want to start off?
Why not come over and watch Snapchat? Transfer Talk is a Snapchat show that chats about transfers every single day, so come and subscribe to that.
Cool. Sam, you must have something to plug. Come on.
New something coming soon. That's all I'm going to say. New something coming soon. On...
Really? That's banging. Oh. What a
Jesus.
No, because
the SEO on that.
I don't know how I'm supposed to say it. Just a new show coming soon. Yeah. Watch out for that. And it's
Yeah, definitely go out after this and Google new something, Sam Abasaki, and see what you get.
I'm trying to be discreet.
All right. Well, thanks very much for watching, everybody. Thanks to you guys for joining me. Obviously, let us know what you think of our opinions in the comments below, and we will catch you next time. Bye.
Peace.
Bye.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.